Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax Live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.
This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.
So you're saying that instead of paying for facial surgery, I should just go to the beach more? I love it. Oh, hey, everybody. My name is Dan Selke, and I am the host of Take the Black Live, the show where every week we talk about all things sci-fi, fantasy, and movies, TV, books, wizards, Gandalfs, hobbitses, space lasers, all kinds of things, dogs in the background, nice, and so on. And I'm here with the other host of Take the Black, Daniel Roman, and if you're watching on our live stream, my dog Scruffy, who I am trying to keep in the frame as he pulverizes pillows in the background.
He's real cute on this show. I'm sorry, audio listeners, you need to go to YouTube because Scruffy is having a great time in the background.
We are on YouTube. We are on Facebook. We are available in podcast form. Why not? And only some. Geez, really making it challenging today. Daniel, how are you? Why don't you talk for a minute while I try to get this under control?
I'm good. I feel wholly less ambitious than your dog, who is sparing no expense or effort to find a good bed for himself on that very comfortable looking couch. But no, I'm good. I'm good. There are a lot of shows on. There are a lot of books to read. There's a lot of fantasy, sci-fi, nerdy stuff to consume at the moment. I'm enjoying it. How are you, Dan? And how are all of you in the chat? Great to see y'all here.
Yeah. Hey, Fantasy Fan. Hey, Spencer. Good to see y'all. I'm good. I was away last week. You and Natalie held down the fort. I was away visiting Fraser Crane's hometown of Seattle, having a great time. Nice. I'll tell you, because I visited the town of North Bend, where they filmed the entirety of the show Twin Peaks, which I'm a giant fan of.
Ooh.
I think I have Laura Palmer dead in plastic right here, Funko Pop. Nice. That was great.
I need to watch that show.
Love Twin Peaks to death. So perhaps next week I'll bring some of my photos. Went to the Double R Diner, went to the Great Northern Hotel, went to the bridge where Ronette Pulaski stumbled over after Killer Bob did horrible things to her. Just had a great tour. They lean in, they had a good time, they know the bread is buttered. The diner especially was like Twin Peaks themed up the wazoo. I loved it.
That's real.
And now
cool.
I'm back.
Did you have a tossed salad and scrambled eggs? I need to ask this since you were in Fraser's hometown. Well, not his hometown, where he lives.
Okay. I'm telling you right now, shocking lack of Fraser merch. I expected way more Fraser references. Some of the tchotchke shops had Fraser stuff, but I don't know. The main thing I think about in Seattle is Fraser, coffee, Microsoft. Yeah. Beards, and that's about it. And I saw a few of those things, but no, not nearly enough Fraser for my liking. It's fine though; I'll get over it.
That's you know, the world is full of small injustices, and that strikes me as a fairly egregious one. But it sounds like it was a good trip. Twin Peaks sightseeing is always good. One of these days, I will watch that show. I always get it mixed up with Peaky Blinders, maybe because they both got peak. I'm sure they have literally nothing in common, though.
No.
Aside from that. So what are we talking about today, Dan? Because it has been, I don't want to say a lively week. It maybe has not lively, but there's a fair amount to discuss. And one or two shows in particular that are speeding toward their conclusion that we need to address too. So where do we begin on this fine Wednesday?
Well, we have two folk talking about the Rings of Power. And I think I've seen tomorrow's finale ahead of time. I think you have too. Have you seen it yet?
I have not yet. I haven't. So I'm here with the rest of our listenership. So don't spoil it for us. But I want to know generally what you thought of maybe the finale, but also just the season as a whole. I see people in the chat saying they're enjoying it. I see some people like Dragonheart saying bad, bad, very, very bad. So, you know, this is kind of what I expect anytime you bring up the Rings of Power. It's going to be that kind of split. So where do you land, Dan, looking at season two and in the rear view?
Well, I think you're jumping ahead, Daniel, because we are going to talk about a big spoiler spoiler-free review. We're going to give our impressions. I'll tell you my impressions of the finale of the season as a whole. Talk about how it happened, what it did right, what it did wrong, now that we're almost there at the end and I've seen everything. But before we get to Middle Earth, I thought we'd stop briefly by Westeros, because there's been another slight turn in the very entertaining ongoing drama of Game of Thrones creator, House of the Dragon creator, Song of Ice and Fire writer, George R.R. Martin, basically calling HBO a pack of lying thieves. Long story short, George R.R. Martin came out like a month ago now and just publicly criticized House of the Dragon, the Game of Thrones prequel show, said it diverges way too much from his source material, Fire and Blood, which was surprising because he's deeply involved in these prequel shows, deeply involved in producing. And it's just been bizarre to see him come out publicly against this. He's been mostly quiet since then. But I'm not sure I can ever read any negative thing he says about anything ever and not think of this again. So on his Not a Blog, really quick jaunt over to this area for those of you wanting to get to the Rings of Power fun. He was writing about his trip to Europe earlier this year, and he just talked about how the first few months of 2024 had been no fun, let us say. January, February, March, things just kept getting worse until we came to April Fool's Day, when it finally dawned on me that I was the fool and had been for years. But I do not want to talk about that now, or maybe ever. We shall see. And I look at that and I can't help it. It sounds very much like his more explicit complaints about how stressed he is over House of the Dragon diverging from his source material, about his misgivings about how they've been going. He wrote the one blog post criticizing the Blood and Cheese stuff. It sounded like he had a lot more in the chamber that he's not sharing, is what we heard behind the scenes too. He deleted it, so I don't have no idea what HBO and him have talked about behind the scenes. I get the idea that he's still not terribly happy with where the show has gone, but may or may not actually be specific about it going forward. Maybe he's at a point where he's like, they're going to do what they're going to do, and it's just beyond me. Saying, like, I was the fool for years, having a bit of a falling out with his notions that his work can be adapted accurately in HBO.
Yeah, I think there's definitely, you know, it's hard not to think of what's going on with HBO about that in particular. He did talk a little about, you know, all the stressors that had gone away when he went on his trip, kind of came rushing back when he got back in mid-August. And, you know, it hasn't been a bad year for him just because of HBO. Like, he's also talked a bit about losing his friend Howard Waldrop in January. I saw someone talk about Ben Jack. Are there things that could be other than the HBO shows? And I think this comment in particular about the April Fool's Day, probably HBO. I think the stressors in general, you know, Howard Waldrop was his literal oldest friend in the sci-fi community. Like, they were friends since they were in high school. So I know that was a big thing weighing on him this year, and has been, and probably will continue to be. But I think with the fool comments, my first so my big thought about that is, it seems like HBO took a long time to get to a point where they really wanted to consider his opinions about some of his spinoffs. Like, mm-hmm. we talked about this a few weeks ago about how they did Blood Moon. They dumped like $30 million or whatever amount of large amount of money into a Blood Moon pilot. And then we're like, oh, this is bad. Maybe we shouldn't make this show. And he apparently had reservations about Blood Moon before they even shot it, because there's no basis in the source material for that show. It was kind of a wild gamble. And then they finally came back around, and the two spinoffs, which are going into, which have filmed and stuff, House of the Dragon and the Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, were mm-hmm. like the first two he suggested, where he's like, if you're going to do spinoffs, maybe do these two. So it took HBO a long time to get there. So maybe it seemed like they were listening to him. And then it was a total backslide, because obviously he's got a bunch of issues with the way season two turned out. So I think it's fairly, you know, we're assuming here, obviously, but I don't know what else that would be about, because I think, you know, maybe putting so much attention into the HBO stuff when he should just have said screw it and gone off and written his books and not worried about it. I don't know. Maybe some combination of all those things, but I can't think of what else it could be about, really.
Are you struggling to lose weight and keep it off? Tired of wasting time and money on starvation diets that lead to more frustration and stress? If there was a weight loss solution that could actually work for you, would you try it? Then head to Golo.com.
I'm Steve. I lost 138 pounds in 9 months on Golo.
I'm Amber. I've lost 128 pounds with Golo.
If you're ready to take back control of your life, head to Golo.com now and see how Golo can work for you. That's Golo.com.
My sleep is way better. My inflammation has gone way down. Golo saved my life. I was way overweight. That's what sent me down the path. I wanted to make sure and live for my kid.
I have literally tried everything. I was on the verge of getting gastric bypass surgery, and I saw the Golo commercial, and it was the last thing I tried because it worked.
Join over 2 million people who found a better way to lose weight with Golo. Your healthier and happier life begins at Golo.com. That's Golo.com. Again, Golo.com.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Yeah, I agree with you. Nothing's really changed. Like, he's upset about what happened with Hatchlight in season two. HBO is probably going to go ahead and do the thing anyway. And
yeah,
I hope that everyone finds a way to play nice together in the sandbox. And honestly, I don't have much else to say about it, unless you guys have something else you want to hear. And I don't think you do. So I think we should move on to the main event. The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power. Season two, but ending tomorrow on Amazon Prime Video.
You talk about it for a sec. I need to get up for just a second because, fool that I am, I locked my cat in the mudroom and he's real sad about it. So let me go do that. But introduce the Rings of Power to our wonderful listeners.
Will do. You have fun, Dan. So yeah, the Rings of Power. It's the second season. Been running for two seasons now. Started in 2022. Amazon spent so much money on this. Hundreds of millions of dollars, and the returns have been, it seems, decent, if not a rip-roaring success. People are watching, but not so many people that they're going to break the bank. Fans like the show, but they're not so ravenous about it that they're going to be the fan club that ends all fan clubs. And now that we're at the end of season two, I think it's a good time to look back and consider, did we enjoy the second season? Was it an improvement? What did it do right? What did it do wrong? What could it improve? Does the show need to have more seasons? Should it? Does it deserve them? And I'll start by saying I've watched the finale, and I can say this. The finale is probably the best episode of the season. They built up to some climaxes, which is pretty common thing to do. I mean, we've been building
Don't tell
up
House
to
of the Dragon.
Yeah. God.
Sorry.
Let's not relitigate that right now. But yes, you're right. House of the Dragon missed the memo that a season should end with a climactic event. But the Rings of Power does. It's been building up to kind of everything that you've been expecting. So, you know, the I'm not spoiling anything. The dwarves in Khazad Dûm, there's been tension between Durin and his father, also named Durin. The Balrogs hanging out in the shadows. We know it's going to show up sooner or later. Well, get ready. The Battle of Eregion. Yes, the Battle of Eregion is raging. Adar is attacking. Sauron's within, manipulating Celebrimbor. Galadriel's there too. Like, surprise, surprise, they're going to meet up. And there's going to be tension. In Rune, the stranger and whoever he is, whoever he could possibly be, has been trying to learn from the Dark Wizard. That might happen too. So yeah, like things come to a head in the finale, which is satisfying to watch. There are some great moments. The Eregion stuff especially is good. The Celebrimbor sound stuff is good. Kind of the same stuff that's been good throughout the season is pretty good, is good in the finale. And maybe a bit of an extra punch because now we have climaxes to these stories. Opposite turn is the stuff that's been a little underwhelming in the finale in throughout the whole season. The Numenor stuff has been kind of hit or miss for a lot of people, I think. I haven't enjoyed the Stranger Rune Hobbits plot line like I did last season as much. Not a giant fan of Tom Bombadil. So again, shocker of shocks, nothing too surprising. That stuff isn't as compelling to me, but it's a good, solid, entertaining episode. Daniel, have you enjoyed this season of The Rings of Power?
I think we're in a similar place here where I've had to get to a point where I'm not taking it too seriously.
Yep.
Because obviously as an adaptation of the events of the Second Age, it's pretty bad. And they kind of like signed on to do it that way from the start because they were compressing the timelines, and that really takes a lot of that really throws everything off, because the Second Age and the Silmarillion, it's like over thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, figures cross paths in different ways because of that. But I think the Rings of Power, it is better this season than last season and in a lot of ways. But I do agree with you that I think it's a fairly uneven show, and in a way that I can't recall too many shows where I've watched and felt like, oh, these plot lines are really uneven. Like, some of them are pretty good, to the point where, like, so I have not seen the finale. It excites me to hear you say that it is the best episode of the season, because I did not feel that way about season one. I thought season one, probably episode 6, which was the battle episode in Mordor, was probably one of the better ones, as well as the early episodes. I think the first couple of episodes of the show are some of the best episodes of the show, honestly. But the, you know, in episode 7, there were a few moments like watching Celebrimbor realize he was in an illusion. Spoiler alert, that happened last week.
Yeah, 6 days.
That scene, I was watching and I was like, this is a 10 out of 10 scene. The actors are crushing it. The fact that he broke the illusion with Feanor's hammer, I thought was a really great lore touch, because, like, you know, like, Feanor was this famed craftsman of the elves. He crafted the Silmarils. He was Celebrimbor's mentor. It's hard to get more enchanted than Feanor's hammer. So to have that be the thing that breaks Sauron's spell, ultimately, I thought was just a chef's kiss. There were a lot of those things in that scene. And then, like, a few minutes later, Elrond is smooching Galadriel and there's dramatic music. And I'm like, oh, yeah, it's this show. So the Rings of Power feels like a, you know, you got to take the good with the bad. There's some really cool stuff. And there's some really absurd stuff to me. And I do think I agree with you about Numenor. There was one episode where I liked the Numenor stuff, which was the Kemen episode where Kemen's a giant asshat to everyone and murders a dude. That was the high point. I heard that they had some issues getting the Numenor plotline to like make sense in editing with what they had shot. And it kind of feels that way watching it. It just doesn't gel the way some of the other ones do. So on the whole, I mean, I'm not going to say I think the Rings of Power should be the most expensive show in the history of television. But I think it has found its footing a little more. I think it should get its... Look, we're in an age where shows are being canceled left and right. I'm never going to begrudge a show getting the chance to tell a full story. I'm glad that it sounds like Amazon is committed to doing more seasons of this thing. But I'll always love the dwarves more than I love... Like, I keep forgetting The Stranger even has a plot line this season. so that's pretty telling. So what were some... Were there other highlights for you, Dan? What other thoughts do you have about this beast?
It's the same that everybody else has. Like, I know that Nicole just said what everybody thinks, that love the dwarves and anything Sauron. The elves and the Stranger Harfords are okay. Couldn't care about Numenor. It is very uneven. Also, let's not forget that, like, Elendil is in this show. Wait, is that even
his name? He's so good, too. Yeah, the actor, I love the actor they got for Elendil. I feel like that's a top tier casting, and they're kind of wasting him.
I'm glad. I'm sure he's fine. I haven't really noticed him because he hasn't been in it barely at all.
Do you mean Isildur? You mean Isildur.
I'm talking about his dad. I mean Isildur. Yes. Yeah. Elendil
Isildur
has been good.
Is totally, fully agree. I don't love that casting, and he's wasted. I really like his dad, Elendil.
Yeah, solid. And I agree they deserve more not so much deserve as in they're doing a decent job. I'll tell you what, I enjoyed the second season more than the first season too, but I am not legit sure if that's because they really stepped up their game. Because like we've said, the season's still pretty uneven. Or if it's because I went in with my expectations properly adjusted. The truth is, I don't expect a ton out of this show. And if I get a scene of real power, like there's one between Sauron and Celebrimbor in the finale that was legit good on a level this show doesn't hit very often. It's a thrill.
That's how I felt about E7.
And I can just sort of... Not nod off through, but endure the more prosaic kind of TV writery feeling scenes. You know, Elrond kisses Galadriel as cover to give her a lockpick. The Numenor just kind of sits on the side and just lurches from plot line to plot line. The rune stuff struggles to hold my interest. All of that I'm more apt to forgive because I just don't expect it to really thrill me anymore. So I don't think that's actually I've enjoyed this season because I've had the correct approach to it, which is don't expect too much, which I don't think is a great place for a show to be in. I have liked what I've seen.
Yeah.
And I would watch a third season. I can't say that I'm overwhelmed with interest. And I think that's what the show has earned. I think the show has been nice and pleasant. And just lacking in just an extra special spark that can really pull me in. I think the material is there, but they just haven't found a good way in to make this a show that I'm fully invested and obsessed over. I like parts. I don't really like other parts. You put it all together and you get a decent way to spend an hour.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. I mean, I have had a good time watching it, but I fully agree with everything you're saying, where it does feel like I'm going to forget about it the second it's off air. Let's put it that way. I've already probably thought about the first two episodes of The Penguin more than I've thought about The Rings of Power all season. That show is fantastic. I think, you know, is it better than season one? That's interesting, because I think maybe in some ways and not in others, it's almost like they fixed my big qualm always with season one was that they had good broad picture ideas and really bad, like, minutia execution, getting from point A to point B in interesting ways, really ridiculous plot holes, like Halbrand is so injured. Mm-hmm. He needs elven healing, but we're going to put him on a horse and make him ride halfway across Middle Earth from Mordor to Eregion, which is like, sure, he was really injured. I believe that. So I think this season has been a little better with some of that stuff, but, like, you know, Celeborn's a great example. I saw someone point out Celeborn, FPL Forest. There's so many plot holes, characters teleporting everywhere. Where is Celeborn whilst Galadriel is kissing Elrond? Celeborn really bugs me, I gotta be honest, because that is an instance where we know Galadriel has a husband. They can't really change it because they're married in Lord of the Rings. Elrond is married to her daughter with Celeborn, and, like, they've just haven't mentioned him once all season. So there's stuff like that where it's like, they're just doing their thing, man. You gotta just go with it. So yeah, Rings of Power, profoundly mid, but nice to look at. I think the music's been great. The visuals are nice.
So nice.
But it's not going to leave a lasting impact.
The Celeborn thing is probably not. The Celeborn thing is an example. Like, I don't know. I haven't noticed that many plot holes. But again, my antenna hasn't been, like, really attuned to check out everything. The Celeborn thing is a good example, because that's an example of what I feel like is just kind of prosaic TV writing in a show where you should be aiming for something higher and more mythic, and dare I say a little more HBOS mature. Because if I had to guess, and I don't know, I haven't talked to the showrunners, why they cut Celeborn, Galadriel's husband, it would be because it's easier to create tension if a character is single. And single people are young, they're hot, they go around doing what they want. And if you have them married, you have to, like, create an interesting dynamic with a married couple, which is just, that takes a little more time and craft and maturity to do. So you just cut them out, and Galadriel's is essentially a free and easy swinging single gal. And they think that will make her more appealing, and it's just wrong. It just doesn't really feel quite right. It makes a plot hole where there need be none. And I think there's too many examples of them taking that kind of easy route, even though the show goes down fine. It's not like it angers me, because I haven't given it the power to anger me, because I learned early on this is not the kind of show I should really get invested in and really look at closely, because it doesn't reward that kind of thing. Like, Tom Bombadil is another good example. Like, Tom Bombadil here isn't really doing anything for the story. He's not a really compelling character. No. It's taken focus away from what might be an interesting angle with the stranger. They're kind of throwing stuff at the wall and see what sticks, and this does not stick. And I think they did it because, well, Tom Bombadil, he's a guy from the books. We can bring him in, even though he doesn't really fit, and it has to violate what he's like in the books. It's just kind of not good enough at the planning stages.
Yeah.
To really still interest me.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. It's fine. It's fine. Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. And I think you can see that in some plot lines, because it seems like a lot of the ones that the show has invented for itself, it just doesn't really know what to do with. Like, I enjoyed the Harfoots are always fun. I liked Nori meeting the Stewers and then being like, Harfoots living in holes, you know, kind of planting that seed for, like, one day they'll build the Shire type thing. That was fun and charming and stuff. But I do think, like, this, I think so. This is a telling thing for me. And anytime a show, I think you can tell a lot by when shows put things from their late episodes in early trailers, and when the early trailers mostly have things from early episodes. And I've realized that there are several scenes that were in preseason trailers for the Rings of Power, which are in the finale, including that one with like Galadriel and Sauron. Because this isn't a spoiler. We haven't seen it yet. It's obviously going to be in the finale.
Yeah, I think
when a show is front loading finale scenes into preseason trailers, that's probably not a great sign. And I think that some of the plot lines, you know, Arondir is another one. They killed Bronwyn off screen, presumably because the actress had another commitment or something, I would guess, because they never even showed her. So probably they couldn't get her back. It really feels like they had no idea what to do with him this season, which is a shame because Ismael Cruz Cordova is great as Arondir. Doesn't feel like the show knew what to do with it. The only plot lines that feel a little grounded are the ones where they're drawing pretty directly from the text, even though they're changing it drastically. You know, they don't need to wonder what do we do with Sauron and Celebrimbor. Like, that is laid out for them, and it's not a coincidence that it's pretty compelling. The dwarves, you published an article today about this, where a Tolkien expert was talking about how the dwarves are, this is probably the best on-screen interpretation of the dwarves that we've seen. And I agree with that. You know, one of the rare instances where maybe it is fleshing out a plot line that it doesn't have a whole lot of basis for from the book and doing it well. But yeah, I'm glad to have seen the Rings of Power season two. But I don't think it will be topping any lists for me at the end of the year, you know?
I also agree with Red RL, who says, although Rings of Power never hit the heights of House of the Dragon, does from time to time, I've thoroughly enjoyed season two, which I'm very, very glad about. Good for you.
Yeah.
A fun watch with a fresh air from the whiplash towards House of the Dragon season two. It's an interesting point of comparison, because House of the Dragon, I did give my investment over to. I did allow myself to get emotionally involved. And then I'll admit, I was hurt by some of the, because I was so emotionally invested, I was let down by some of the plot twists there. I do appreciate that the House of the Dragon aims higher than the Rings of Power when it comes to trying to get at the heart of human emotion and the heart of like big, difficult problems. The Rings of Power, it just feels more driven by a corporate mandate. Not that there isn't any artistry. Not that they don't have flesh and blood people who really want to tell great stories behind it. But it's like you said, there are just too many pieces that don't really feel like they need to be. They're just kind of there because they wanted a big, epic, sprawling show and didn't think through, but why is this needed exactly? And it ends up with this pleasant mush that goes down like, you know, slightly lukewarm mashed potatoes. And you know what? That's not bad. Could be worse.
Yeah.
Or not
could
cold.
Be worse. At least there is a little dollop of gravy on there. Yeah. I mean, it's hard because House of the Dragon, we're holding it to a different standard, right?
We are.
I think House of the Dragon had backlash, but like you said, it's because people were so invested. And I think House of the Dragon season two, for as much as the narrative has kind of turned on season two in a lot of ways, I do think it had a few tremendous episodes that are television history type of, we're going to look back on these as like, these were barn burners. Dragon stuff like this has never been on television or movies before, like Rook's Rest and The Sowing. Even though The Sowing messed with adaptation in a way I didn't love, what they did with the dragons was still astounding in that episode, I think. Mm. But then the finale obviously let a lot of people down. It really felt like this was a writer's strike season of television, even though the strike was not to blame for it losing two episodes. It felt like that kind of season, like Heroes season two, where they abruptly cut it off like halfway through because Hollywood was on strike. Rings of Power, I don't know that anyone's going to look back at this a year from now and think, I mean, that's maybe not fair. Like hardcore people who really enjoyed the season will continue to love the season. Victor says, Victor DiGiovanni in chat says, Rings of Power is basically the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen of Tolkien, a mashup of a bunch of disconnected stories and timelines and characters put all in the same story. And I think that's kind of fair. I think that's kind of on point, actually, Victor, because, you know, have you seen League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, Dan?
Seen it? No. I've read the comic, and the comic is really tightly written and really well done. Like,
I'm sure it is.
I wish the Rings of Power were a little more tight like that. Alan Moore doesn't really miss. The movie, I hear, is terrible.
Yeah, the movie. Well, the movie is it is similar, where you just have to go with it and be entertained, because it's
sure.
a bunch of different stories, and I'm sure Alan Moore connects these things better than the movie did. And this feels similar, where it's like, this is going to have a wizard, it's going to have some hobbits, it's going to have some elves and dwarves and a Sauron, and we're going to make it work somehow. I do kind of wish they had leaned more into some of the difficult elements, like you mentioned, like the time scale, Galadriel being married. Like, it feels like it could have been a more compelling story if it embraced those instead of sidestepping them because it was intimidated. But at the end of the day, I have still had fun watching it.
So have I. And the finale is pretty good. That, so you know what?
That's
you
what go I hear.
Enjoy, you go enjoy the parts of the finale that are good, because there are some good parts. And then the parts that are just kind of lame, just ignore them. And then we'll be back here in 2 years to heat up the potatoes and do it again. So kudos, Rings of Power, for being adequate.
Kudos.
I salute you. Clap, clap, clap.
Can
clap.
I ask you a question from our chat that I think is a really good question from Robert Harris? So this is a House of the Dragon question. He says, after going from 10 episodes to 8 episodes, can House of the Dragon really go back to 10 episode seasons? What do you think? And chat, let us know what you think of this as well.
I mean, it absolutely could and should, but it won't, because HBO doesn't want to give it to them, or Warner Bros. Discovery or whatever. That's the answer. Yeah, it could go back. It should go back if they knew it was good for them, but they don't, so it won't.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It's interesting that this is a question, and it feels like a question with this kind of gravity, where it's like, is it even possible? Because, you know, I used Heroes as an example a minute ago from their strike season. Lost was similar, where they had a shortened season because of some real world circumstances. And then the next seasons just had more episodes again. I wish House of the Dragon could get that, but I think it's possible. I think the budget is kind of a part of the issue. I think House of the Dragon's budget for season two was, I believe, around $30 million an episode. So when you start looking at 10 episodes, that's like a $300 million season. And I don't know that HBO would do that.
You know what this looks like, Dan? And we'll do a whole episode on this eventually, probably sooner rather than later. This looks like a bubble. Where budgets are ballooning on these shows for returns that are not at the level they should be. Budgets ballooning in a baffling way. Like, there's just no way you need this much money to do this stuff. We'll probably see the sharp drop off in these big elaborate genre shows in the next 5-ish years. I think got greedy. I think they assumed if they threw tons of money at some making some giant show like this, it would be a success without thinking about ways to do it in a moderate level, ways to keep costs down, ways to put writing first. And we will see a drop off of the post Game of Thrones fantasy sci-fi boom. It'll be sad, but the quality will still poke through.
But we'll have lived through it. I do feel like we are watching the bubble burst in real time a little bit right now.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and this isn't even necessarily a bad thing, right? Because so when I watched Rings of Power, I watched with my wife the last episode, but the troll that came up was big and scary and cool. And she kind of like turned to me like partway through and was like, you know, this troll really doesn't look much better or any better than the one that was in the Peter Jackson movie. And I kind of agree with that. And it's interesting seeing how like a scrappy film team with limited resources can make really amazing things versus throwing all the money at the world at something. But because there's just so much money, I don't know if there's less tension to get everything right. You would think it would be the opposite, but we have a bunch of real world examples of that not being the case. Cause like all three Lord of the Rings movies cost less than the first season of the Rings of Power. Game of Thrones never had a budget like House of the Dragon season not two close, has. No. Not even close. Part of it is the dragons. It's not an exaggeration when they say the dragons are insanely expensive. Sure. Like, so I do believe that a lot of budget is going there, but even, you know, still, like a $300 million season of television.
Also, like madness. The dragons, look, you just don't need to, you don't need to have a long lingering shot of Daemon leaving Dragonstone. You don't need to have, like Daemon and Rhaenys arguing while, what are their dragons' names? Caraxes and so many names. Melee's kind of flutter in the back. You don't need it. Like you don't, even as cool as like Daemon on the Caraxes going into Dragonstone or Harrenhal was, so many names. You can cut this stuff back.
Yeah.
Especially if it saves the show. It's not going to be, that's not what's going to give your show longevity. And I hope they know that. And we'll see whenever that comes back. Blonde Dragon Beetle comes back every 2 years or so, as somebody said. Yeah. So we'll see what happens then. I kind of agree with Sweeta. It is a little hard to release and see if one of the same writers. And as Victor says too, the strikes may have cost some people some stuff more. Fantasy Everything dropped off the map, as what I've come to expect. It's definitely going to be a ratcheting down of it. And I'm glad that Melissa really liked the Rings of Power, which, I enjoy it too.
And I think
smaller fantasy shows that are bubbling up, like The Interview with the Vampire, so good. And that is a bit more of a scrappy series, doesn't cost like a crazy amount of money. Apple TV Plus has a lot of good stuff going on, and there are even shows like shouldn't cost money but do. Like, how does Severance cost that much per episode? I have no idea. Budgets are impenetrable and difficult to understand.
I think budgets, we should. I just want to say one last thing, which is I hope that if that bubble is bursting, like Victor said, fantasy and sci-fi could be dropping off the map, at least at the quality we've come to expect. I hope that studios just get freaking smarter, because there are so many more, like there are so many fantasy and sci-fi stories you could adapt that would not need a budget like a House of the Dragon. Like, I'm thinking of like the Greenbone saga, which I know I harp on all the time, but that's like a fantasy crime saga. That's a great example of a fantasy show you could probably do that would not cost you $20 to $30 million an episode, because it's set in a contemporary world and would probably be a lot more budget friendly. Like, and it's still like a fantastic, like top five fantasy series for me, the Greenbone Saga. So like, there are so many options like that where it's like, studios need to get smarter instead of throwing money at stuff. We don't need to have a decline in quality. Whether we will, I guess we'll see.
But that's the life cycle of a bubble, of one of
it
these
is.
Things.
Like, true,
there's
true.
A big hit.
True,
true. Everyone piles on. A lot of those people kind of forget what made the big hit a big hit and think that kind of just they take the wrong lessons. They go for size. They go for spectacular. and that's not sustainable. Yeah. And then it goes away. Like, that is the life cycle of any bubble, be it in media, be it in technology, be it in kind of any industry anywhere. And
true.
You know, life's a beautiful thing, and we're watching it happen. Speaking of evidence of a fantasy and sci-fi nice. Bubble, Daniel, what's going on with The Witcher?
Well, The Witcher has seen this bubble bursting and saying, hell not, we're gonna get out. But no, so The Witcher is, it's all good stuff, jokes aside. Liam Hemsworth has been giving some of his first interviews this past week since joining the show. And he's basically confirmed a little bit more of the filming timeline. So just wanted to touch on that. So there's around 3 weeks left of filming for The Witcher season 4. They are almost done. Then they're taking a 4-month break, and then they're filming season 5 for around 8 months in next year. So they're filming those two back to back, which we knew because the show is ending with season 5. As it should, because that's how long the story probably needs to tell the whole thing. So sounds like good stuff for The Witcher. You know, we'll see what happens with that whole transition, because obviously The Witcher's had a very divisive run, and I think people are very curious, either very curious or not curious at all, what it will be like without Henry Cavill. I'm cautiously curious. They just filmed a pretty big battle scene, are the reports that we were getting. Or if not the battle itself, they filmed some of the kind of setting scenes around the battle for this battle called the Battle of the Bridge, which happens in the book Baptism of Fire, which is a really important one. So they're shooting the next 3 weeks, I believe, at a studio on sound stages. So presumably they'll do the rest of it there. But yeah, good times on the continents.
I'm glad. I'm curious. I'll check it out. Again, it's kind of like the Rings of Power. I'm curious.
Yes.
I'm not rapturous to get to the next season or anything, but I'm curious. Yeah. Which,
yeah, it's one of those.
I'm sure they're hoping for more than I'm curious, more than curiosity. But that's
hey,
why
they can go a long way with I'm curious. Yeah, I think The Witcher is definitely one that I approach with utter skepticism, and then I'm just pleasantly surprised if it's better than I expect, which was the case for season 3, because I really loathed season 2, and I had a lot of problems with season 1, and season 3 was largely a step in the right direction in a lot of ways, in my opinion, so... I'm happy to be surprised by The Witcher. We've got more Witcher stuff coming before then. There's an anime movie coming out in February, which I will be watching, Sirens of the Deep. There's a new book coming out because Anders Edge Sapkowski said, hey, people are interested in this thing I wrote like 20 years ago. Guess I should write some more and get some more money for it. So that should be fun too. Why not?
Victor said it calls it bait and switcher. Good joke. Robert Harris asked if they're waiting to drop season 4 until they're done with season 5. I don't think they're going to wait until they're completely done with it.
I doubt it.
The fact that they're doing it back to back does likely mean we won't have one of those incredibly long waiting periods between seasons, which is great. That'll be nice, because that's one of the big problems really stopping these shows from getting penetration. And we'll cross again. Another bridge will cross when we come to it. Do you think
they'll release it one a year?
I don't know, but I hope they do. That would be the smart play.
Yeah, I kind of wonder with stuff like, because, you know, Netflix has been dragging out its seasons more and more, like Cobra Kai. I got an angry text from my brother about the fact that they're splitting the final season of Cobra Kai into thirds and releasing them like months apart. It's like, oof, that's kind of you can guess that they're probably doing that for like Netflix's viewership more than because it's necessarily the right thing for Cobra Kai. So I doubt that we will, because I don't know if Netflix would let us have that. But I do agree with you that it would probably be the right thing for the show.
Man, chunks of 3 months apart. That's like like nobody wants that. Like, I think there are some folk who like drop everything at once, and some folk who like one episode a week. I don't think anybody wants like little chunks months apart, but you know what? You won't know what you want until you innovate. Daniel, what are you and everyone out in the chat? What are you watching recently? Watching anything new? Watching anything old? Reading anything like some kind of book reading dork? What's up?
All of the above. So I've been watching The Penguin. That's my main new thing aside from Rings of Power. I've been watching. Really excellent. That's another one of those where when they announced it, I was like, does anyone need this? Why are we doing this franchises? But the show is out now, and the first two episodes have been really like rock solid. Colin Farrell is amazing in that role. I love Kristen Milioti. We talked about The Penguin a bunch last week when Natalie was on the show, because she's been really into it too. And yeah, that show's great. You've been watching. Oh, you've seen the whole thing, haven't you?
I have seen the whole thing. Sneaky, it's excellent. It's very, very good.
Yeah.
My only critique of The Penguin, I mean, there are a couple of, I think they rush a couple of things in the middle. It gets really good by the end, too. It really ramps up and ends on a very high note. And it's excellent throughout.
Okay.
My critique of The Penguin, and kind of the shows like this, it's that it's a little sad that in order to get like this rich, layered, interesting crime drama made, you have to attach it to Oswald Cobblepot. Like, this is the kind of show that you used to be able to get made on HBO, like The Wire, The Sopranos, as an original series, and now you kind of have to smuggle it in with an IP attached. Something very similar happened with the original Joker movie, which I have some misgivings with as well. But that movie definitely had some, it tapped into something. It definitely had a power to it. It felt like an old Scorsese movie from the 70s, only now it has a big IP thing attached to it, which is kind of like The Penguin. The Penguin feels like an old HBO show, but now it just has a Batman character in it. And it's a really good show. Yeah. I really liked it a lot. And you guys who are listening, you're lucky because you get to watch the rest. I've already seen it. I'm even luckier. And you get to experience some pretty cool stuff coming up. But it is a little sad that that's what you need to do to tell groundbreaking popular stories now. Whereas in the past, you could do something original. And now it's got to be attached to some kind of IP.
Hey, are you saying industry is not original? HBO is still taking swings.
HBO is like the one. HBO still does it.
Yeah, I think that is a fair statement, though. And I did have that thought, like, this is a great show. I almost forget that it's a Batman show sometimes because it really is just a Sopranos crime drama, at least where I'm at, two episodes in. There are hints of Batmanishness, like... I loved Sophia Falcone's costume in the last one I watched. She had like a zebra striped like trench coat. And I was like, that is such a Batman villain costume.
You don't even know how good her costume is.
Love it. Fantastic. So I'm enjoying it as an expansion of the Batman. I do hear what you say, though. And I hope that at some point studios realize they can just make good things. Because again, the Green Bond saga is right there. It's a crime drama. It's exactly what we're talking about. It's exactly what we're talking about. For the love of God, studio executives, make this show and make yourselves a lot of money.
I mean, as long...
Slash rant.
Yes. Apparently, listening to Roman, make the Green Bond saga. I haven't read it, but I hear it's good.
That's so good.
At the end of the day, as long as the shows are good, I don't mind. The Penguin is good. I also like Victor's joke about he would have called the show Oz, which of course is the one HBO show that kind of launched it as the current network was the prison drama Oz back in the day. That's where we are. Good show. I am actually seeing the Joker sequel, Folie à Deux, tonight at a semi-early screening, so I'll get back to you on that. I wanted to see it earlier so I could talk about it, but I can't. I hear it's not as good, so we'll see how that goes. And beyond that, I do like Industry quite a bit. It took so long for that show to catch on, though. It's really just now. Really only now is Industry being talked about. And it's 6 years and three seasons in. Like, I don't blame. Well, I do a little bit because they're all complicit. I can understand why a network wouldn't want to make that kind of long investment in a new original show with the hopes that it will catch on years down the line when you could just, mm-hmm. you know, make a financial drama, set in Narnia and do it that way and get folk eyeballs on it immediately. And
it's all
I respect
about how the beavers
HBO.
Allocate things.
Yes, I respect HBO for putting in the time to build that show up, but it's getting harder and harder. So God bless industry and its cast of stock trading nymphomaniacs, and very entertaining.
Yeah, yeah, totally. It takes time to build an industry, I hear. Yeah, I have been reading a lot when I've been not depressed about the television landscape. I just finished The Gods Below by Andrea Stewart. That was really good. Like dark fantasy, kind of reminded me a little bit of Elden Ring, but with like a Mistborn type magic system. Hollow Earth, lots of mysteries, post-apocalyptic type fantasy. Loved that book. I don't know if I liked it quite as much as her previous series, which started with The Bone Shard Daughter, but I'll definitely be reading more whenever the next one's out. The next few months are like stacked with fantasy and sci-fi books. I'm about to read a sci-fi, military sci-fi called Dark Side by Michael Mame, which I'm very excited for. Like sci-fi mystery. And Wind and Truth is coming around the bend. The fifth Stormlight Archive book. Only 2 months away now. The Fury of the Gods by John Gwynn is coming out. That's the end of his Bloodsworn trilogy, I think, which is like a Viking fantasy. Those books freaking rule. So I'm excited for that one too. Lots of good books. If only television treated my heart as well.
Very cool. And finally, before we get into the lightning round, Victor asked for the franchise. No, I forgot the franchise. No. It's coming out in like 4 days.
I want to watch it.
Yeah, I do too. I mean,
I'm mildly curious.
I'm a little gun shy after the guy's last thing, Avenue 5, such a clusterfuck of blameless.
Man, you just.
But Veep was great. Veep was really good.
Avenue 5. That was a big disappointment, that show. I was so hyped for Avenue 5 before it came out. I think I quit after like three episodes.
The guy behind Veep does sci-fi? Yeah, come on. I'm there. But it was not good. The franchise is another one. It's like it's an original show, and I've heard very little about it. Hopefully HBO is the kind of network that will give it a chance if it needs some runway. A lot of shows do. So we'll see across that bridge when we come to it so much. I'll watch it, though. I'm curious because I like Armando Iannucci. All right, Daniel, should we close this out with the WIC News lightning round where we go through a bunch of stories we couldn't get to in the main body of the show and give our 20-second opinions on them, no more, no less? All right.
Let's do it.
Tell me if you've heard this one before. I have not put these in any order, so I will just go ahead and ask you first. Daniel.
Sounds good.
Outlander has wrapped filming on its eighth and final season. Don't believe me? Here's a picture.
Man, talk about shows surviving the bubble and all that stuff. Outlander's been on since the heyday of Game of Thrones. They are finally wrapping their final season. I love this for the Outlander fans. Like, good for this show. It has had a hell of a run. Most shows should be half as lucky to get the sort of run that Outlander had. So I hope it finishes strong. I'm excited for it. All right. I think we might have talked about this last week, but I'm still curious what your take on this is. So Snowpiercer star David Diggs has boarded The Boys for its final season.
Yeah. I imagine The Boys is the kind of show that a lot of actors are eager and happy to work on because they get to curse. They get to do disgusting things, and they probably get to die in repulsive ways. So if I were Snowpiercer star David Diggs, I'm sure he's going to have an interesting 2025. or 24, whatever. Daniel, Sophie Turner,
yes,
who played Sansa on Game of Thrones, says she wonders what Sansa's up to now, would be willing to come back to the franchise if the same people were involved as were involved on the original show.
That's the hard thing, Sansa, Sophie Turner. You can never go back to that perfect moment where everyone who was involved the first time is still around. I don't know the context for her saying this. I mean, I wonder what Sansa's up to, but sure. I can't say I would ever really want a revival with Sansa. I didn't even like the idea of the Jon Snow series, honestly. So,
sure.
I appreciate the sentiment more than anything. All right, this next one. Marvel and DC they have lost the ability to use the term superhero as a trademark, which previously they jointly held.
Yeah, I had no idea. I didn't know Marvel and DC had trademarked the term superhero. I don't think anybody did. But apparently they did, and they sued or threatened to sue smaller companies that use the term in their materials. Like one company was going to make a thing called Super Babies, and they got knocked for that. Seems like complete bullshit to me. Why should you be able to only... A superhero is a pretty vague general term. Yeah, down with you. So good, and glad's over.
Nice.
Yes. Daniel.
Ask me the next one. I don't want to talk about this, dude.
Okay, sure. We'd love to.
I know you...
Daniel, I'm going to go ahead and call him legendary director Frank Darabont.
Nice.
Director of The Shawshank Redemption. The Green Mile, the first runner of The Walking Dead. These are all impressive things. Is coming out of a 10-year retirement to direct two episodes in the final season of Stranger Things.
Look, the final season of Stranger Things is going to be off the hook. That's really exciting. Mm. That's about as big a get as you can get for Stranger Things, to get Frank Darabont coming out of retirement. Because he loved the show so much, he's a fan. That's why he came out of retirement. I think Dan Trachtenberg, who did Prey, and is doing some episodes. Sean Levy, be great. Okay.
Sean Levy. Well, yeah, that's a good lineup.
Elon Musk. Yes, it is. Elon Musk took a shot at OpenAI founder Sam Altman and called him Littlefinger. Two words.
Yeah, basically the story is Elon Musk, who is pretty well known for making Twitter gaffes. This is one of his lesser ones. He's not threatening to impregnate Taylor Swift or anything. He insulted the OpenAI founder by calling him Littlefinger, but he spelled it wrong. It was like little space finger, not just Littlefinger, all one word. You know, not the most embarrassing thing he's done, or the second or third or 400th, but it makes a list. All right, Daniel. Speaking of Game of Thronesy things, Kristen Nairn, who played Hodor on Game of Thrones, has an autobiography out, Beyond the Throne, Epic Journeys, Enduring Friendships, and Surprising Tales. There's the cover. Thoughts?
Yeah. Yeah. Hodor wrote a tell-all. He's the first person from the cast to write a book about Thrones, but in his life growing up in the Troubles in I believe Ireland, and kind of everything leading up to his experience on Thrones. So kudos to him. This book is out now. You can go get it from the store as soon as you stop listening to our podcast. I have not read it, but I probably will at some point, because I'm very intrigued. And we're gonna end with some sad but very important and consequential news here today. We're going to put legendary in front of this one too. The legendary actor Maggie Smith has unfortunately passed away at the age of 89.
She died last week. Yeah, I mean, not much we can say. You probably know who Maggie Smith is. 2-time Oscar winner, Downton Abbey breakout star, McGonagall in the Harry Potter movies, Professor. Great actress. I think we always kind of associate her with like the quick, witty comeback, which apparently she didn't so much like. She was charmingly annoyed that she got so famous late in life for being on Downton Abbey and Harry Potter, because she was like a proper actress who appeared in Noel Coward plays and really serious dramas for a long time. To the end of her life, it's like, nobody thinks I'm that lady from Downton Abbey and asked me to like mouth off to them. And it's really annoying, which is great. Loved her. Incredibly talented. Sad to see her go, but she had a very full life and a great career.
Yeah. That's definitely a we shall never see her like again type situation. So we'll be missed.
Indeed. And that is our show, everybody. She wasn't Sister Act, Robert Harris. Yes, she was. She was supposed to take in Whoopi Goldberg, but she didn't want to. But you know what? She came around and she ended up seeing the spark in Whoopi and they became friends. Good movie. Sister Act, also Sister Act 2, Back in the Habit. Thanks for watching, everybody. We are available to stream in podcast form on iTunes, YouTube Music, wherever podcasts are available. We also meet here live, L-I-V-E, every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, or 3 on the East Coast, 1 in the mountains, and noon over in California. Watch us there. Listen to us. Give us a like. Give us a subscribe. Leave a comment. We love you. You're beautiful. And as a closer, I'll just say R.I.P. Maggie Smith, and see you later. Bye.
Take care, all.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.
Are you struggling to lose weight and keep it off? Tired of wasting time and money on starvation diets that lead to more frustration and stress? If there was a weight loss solution that could actually work for you, would you try it? Then head to Golo.com.
I'm Steve. I lost 138 pounds in 9 months on Golo.
I'm Amber. I've lost 128 pounds with Golo.
If you're ready to take back control of your life, head to Golo.com now and see how Golo can work for you. That's Golo.com.
My sleep is way better. My inflammation has gone way down. Golo saved my life. I was way overweight. That's what sent me down the path. I wanted to make sure and live for my kid.
I have literally tried everything. I was on the verge of getting gastric bypass surgery, and I saw the Golo commercial, and it was the last thing I tried because it worked.
Join over 2 million people who found a better way to lose weight with Golo. Your healthier and happier life begins at Golo.com. That's G-O-L-O.com. Again, G-O-L-O.com.